From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. In Iraq today, three American soldiers were killed in a roadside bombing north of Baghdad, and at least two Iraqis died in a suicide bombing in the Kurdish town of Erbil. In Baghdad itself, a mortar shell, or perhaps a rocket-propelled grenade, hit the roof of the Sheraton Hotel, where many American contractors live. There was little damage and no one was hurt.
This week, we've been examining the scramble for power as Iraq's main factions look ahead to the scheduled transition to a government led by Iraqis in June. Today, in the third and final part of our series, the Sunnis, who provided the main base of support for Saddam Hussein. With Saddam Hussein in captivity, U.S. officials are urging Iraq's Sunni leaders to come in from the cold and help build a new Iraq. The U.S.-appointed governing council in Baghdad includes some Sunnis, but those leaders are generally scorned in the Sunni heartland north and west of the capital, the so-called Sunni Triangle. There, resistance to the U.S. occupation remains the order of the day, as NPR's Julie McCarthy reports.
The message from Muhsin Abdelhamid reads like a manifesto of idealism for a new Iraq. Hamid heads the Iraqi Islamic Party and is a Sunni member of the U.S.-appointed governing council.
We want a society where all the noble virtues and ethics of Islam are present, because 95% of the Iraqis are Muslims. At the same time, we want a civil society, democratic and free, because we have suffered from the cruel dictatorship of the old regime.
But the people of the rest of Sunni cities of central Iraq say that the cruel regime has been replaced by a cruel American occupation. Creating civil discourse and democracy seem distant dreams in cities such as Samarra. From here, it is plain to see that the Sunnis cooperating with the U.S. occupational authority and the rest of the Sunni community talk two different languages and live two separate realities. Samarra's streets teem with American armor, its entrance a tangle of concertina wire. Soldiers poke from the tops of speeding tanks. Others blast appeals through bullhorns for information on insurgents. It is a filthy, impoverished place, full of menace and people who are seething. They say they had hoped the United States would deliver them from a life spent scrounging for daily staples. 36-year-old Dr. Ahmed Jaffer, who works at Samarra's hospital, says the people of the city see instead American occupiers who batter down their doors, detain their sons, and leave their relatives caught in fatal crossfire. Jaffer says the Sunni resistance here is not about religion or a jihad. He says it is more basic than that.
We are an occupied country, so you don't need to return back to Quran. If anyone occupied the United States, what are you going to do? Any human being, if anyone occupied your home, you are going to fight for.
A memorial at the entrance to the city bears a spray-painted lament. Saddam, there is nothing without you. Dr. Jaffer and others say the sign is misleading, especially in a place where the former leader did nothing to provide even the most meager material comforts.
90% of the people dislike him. But they say, whatever he was, he is better than the U.S. troop. They say, at least he was Muslim, and he was one of us.
Residents say the number of resistors is rising as the number of U.S. raids and arrests continue to mount. But Dr. Jaffer says the resistance is not organized and not led by Saddam loyalists.
The resistance here, it's some sort of revenge. You know, if they kill my cousin, me and 3 or 10 of my other cousins, we could buy guns and do something. That's what will happen here.
The doctor bundles a visiting journalist into his cousin's home behind high walls. Speaking English can mark him as a spy, but his relatives believe his English skills could save their lives should U.S. troops come calling. So he stays. Not far from Samarra sits Duluia. This small Sunni village on the banks of the Tigris once took pride in producing the military and intelligence class that filled the ranks of the former regime. Forced into retirement with the U.S. disbanding of Iraq's army, some former officers pass the time in their stately riverfront gardens. They talk openly about Iraqi generals hunted down last spring and ordinary citizens executed, they say, on false charges of harboring Saddam's lieutenants on the run. Abdullah al-Jaburi says Saddam was not representative of Sunnis and that Shias and Christians also served him. Jaburi, a veteran policeman, says Sunnis now seek a leader based not on a particular sect, but on character.
Now people are tired because they have suffered for more than 30 years of war. We want a clean Iraqi to rule our country. Whatever his sect, whatever his religious, only we want a clean, pure man to rule our country.
Jaburi expresses a widely held feeling that that man won't be found on the current U.S.-appointed governing council. I hate politicians, and the governing council is full of thieves and self-promoters, he says. As he speaks, nearby explosions punctuate the air. Resistors, Jaburi says, looking unalarmed. The cleric at the local mosque that afternoon directed his sermon at the insurgents. Saddam Hussein can still lead the resistance from jail, he says, adding, just as Nelson Mandela did. Political analyst Wahmith Nathmi says he's not surprised by such calls to arms against the authority of U.S. occupation ambassador Paul Bremer.
I think Mr. Bremer was playing with fire when he dissolved the armed forces because he had provoked the base for the resistance.
The Sunni members of the governing council fault the American occupiers for creating a widening circle of violence. But apart from a shared distaste for questions about fallen privilege, council members and the Sunni community appear to have widely disparate views, a gulf that is certain to complicate the role for Sunni politicians as they scramble for power in the new Iraq. Julie McCarthy, NPR News, Baghdad.